Lindsay Rice is with us. Lindsay, you were with us, was it about a month and a half ago?
I think so, yeah.
You told us the story, the true story behind The Natural, the shooting in the movie The Natural. And then you told us about another story that you've been working on, also for DNA Info, right, about the lipstick murders. And Wendy got excited and I got excited. And we said, just keep telling us these tales. Come by whenever you want and tell us these stories. We love these. First of all, welcome back. Great to see you again.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
So tell us a little bit. What do we need to know about these lipstick murders? What went on there?
Well, I feel kind of bad talking about this on such a beautiful day because this is a really gruesome crime. But this is another true crime story of Chicago. This happened 70 years ago this year. Actually, the 70th anniversary was in January, but you know, this year marks the 70th since this happened. And it really came to my mind because of the popularity of the show Making a Murderer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got so hooked in that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that I was just obsessed with it. And when I started thinking about this story, I saw it's, you know, it's definitely a different tale, but there's some similarities and definitely still doubt lingering all these years after, you know, this case has basically been closed and the gentleman who went to jail for it died in 2012. So,
and there were some questions about whether he did in fact commit. I got to confess, right. I've born and bred here in the Chicago area in Brookfield. I grew up and I've not heard of the lipstick murders. Have I?
Well, I think, I grew up like watching a lot of crime shows. And so this was like on one of those, you know, American Justice type, you know, hour specials. And then, you know, working in the Edgewater beat for DNA Info, then I was like, oh my gosh, this is right in my neighborhood. Like, this is right in my backyard.
And give us a little background of the lipstick murders.
So this happened in 1945 and 1946.
Yeah.
And this is about the murder of three women, two of them adult women and one of them a six-year-old girl. And, you know, they were horrifically murdered, all in somewhat of a similar fashion. And ultimately, a man who was a boy at the time, 17, he was convicted for those crimes, but under really questionable circumstances and with very flimsy evidence that was later discredited, and ended up being one of Illinois's longest serving inmates, and then, of course, died in 2012.
Yeah.
So this starts in 1945 in June with the murder of Josephine Ross. She was an uptown woman, and she was stabbed and she was mutilated. Her body was put in a bathtub, and but it looked like this crime had been done with a lot of precision. So that was on the radar of police.
Yeah.
Then about
do we know a motive in this particular crime, or was that hard to determine the motive?
No,
just seemed random.
Yeah, at that point, they really didn't have a lot to go on. So they're investigating this. And about 6 months later in December, Frances Brown, a Lakeview woman, she is murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And she is murdered in a similar fashion. They find her body mutilated, dismembered near a bathtub. And then the heat is really on because now that the police are thinking, okay, there's the serial killer and they may
sure
or may
looked
not
like
be.
It.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very frightening going on in Chicago. So a month after that, January 1946, is when the case really takes a turn. That's when 6-year-old Susan Degnan from Edgewater is taken from her home. They found like a ladder and the window to her bedroom door actually, window open. First day going back to school from winter break, her mom finds she's not there.
Ugh.
You know, they're panicking. I mean, it's absolute chaos. This was one of the biggest crimes that had happened at that time. And they also find a ransom note later that says, you know, don't go to the police, don't go to the FBI, have $20,000 ready and waiting and wait for my word. So
what do you do as a parent? Because, you know, these are bad people who just kidnapped your kid. How do you trust they're going to make the trade with it? You know what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah. Right.
It had to have been, I mean, the worst case scenario that you can imagine
yeah.
as a parent, I would guess.
Are these richer people or not?
Actually, what was interesting is this was...
that's a lot of money at the time.
Mm-hmm.
70 years ago, that's quite a bit of money.
Right. And they were living in a in a very nice part of the neighborhood, right almost there on Sheridan Road. And the dad of the family was, an executive in the meat industry, which was going through a lot of turmoil at that time with Upton Sinclair's, the jungle. And everything going on. So at first they thought...
I read that book, Bill.
Wendy read The Jungle.
Believe it or not.
She had to run around town finding pieces of meat, phantom pieces of meat.
Actually,
very strange.
If I did do that, I'd read it again.
So at first they thought there actually might be a connection between that. Like maybe somebody upset with the father who knew that he was rich, had targeted the family and wanted the girl.
Yeah.
And we have just a minute before we take a break, but so we have two women who were murdered and now the tragedy of a 6-year-old girl who is missing at this point.
Right.
And they did find her body. Where does the lipstick title come in?
So that comes in right after the murder of Frances Brown in December.
The second of the two women.
The second one.
Yeah.
Someone comes upon the scene and scrawled in lipstick on the wall is a message that says, "For heaven's sake, catch me before I kill more. I cannot control myself." And that is really just kind of...
Makes it more chilling, doesn't it?
It really does. And even that message on the wall has been open to debate for years as to, some people have speculated that a reporter that was first on the scene there may have even written that.
Seriously?
I mean, so it's really hard to say where it
was
came
Geraldo
from.
Around then?
Not
that
yet.
That seems like something he would do.
Geraldo's dad. He was around. Wow.
Jerry Rivers Sr.?
Yeah, the first Jerry Rivers was around. But you, we've heard the police over and over in similar instances say that there's some element in people who do this where they almost want to be caught. They want to leave clues and make it almost like a game almost, which makes it very twisted.
Yeah. I mean, in crimes as horrific as this, you've got to think that there's something else going on with someone who's capable of committing that type of crime. And from that crime scene where they actually found the lipstick killer message, nothing was taken from that apartment. So it's just another added layer of why, doesn't really answer that.
We are talking about the lipstick murders, right? Lipstick murders. And Lindsay Rice is in the studio with us, neighborhood reporter, photographer, covering Chicago's far north side for DNAinfo.com.
By the way, Wendy, to come to your house and tell bedtime stories to your kids. This is a service that Lindsay provides.
You know what?
She's got to charge that service.
Yep.
You
extra.
Have such a great voice that I would be able to, they're not comforting stories,
right.
But comforting voice
sure.
of Lindsay Rice.
Yeah. Do Goodnight Moon when we come back. Could you do that for us? All right. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Have they made the Kim Kardashian fat something else?
They're still working
stickers,
on that.
Decals?
They hope to have that ready by fall.
We are talking to Lindsay Rice. She is covering a lot of macabre stuff from the far north side of the city. Works for DNAinfo.com.
You're like the Rod Serling of Rogers Park.
Submitted for your approval. So the lipstick murders we were talking about, two women, a 6-year-old child murdered. And where do we go from here now? The suspect, 17 years old, was arrested. Is that where we continue?
Yeah. So after Suzanne went missing, within that day, they actually found some of her body parts that had been, they got a tip and they checked the sewers. And some of those locations where they found her are still there. And I actually went out and, kind of creepily looked in people's, alleyways and back apartment areas.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a strange vibe just to go over there and realize that this was the place, 70 years ago, all these police were standing over this manhole and, discovering this child.
Oh, that's awful.
Horrific, truly.
Yeah. Where do you think the tip came from? Any ideas on who provided that tip?
I don't know. I think that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Could be somebody.
I get one in a week.
Yeah.
So I'm done for the week. Yeah.
Could be somebody who, happened upon it and didn't want to have anything to do with it or could be somebody with knowledge of that being there.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
So this happened in January. That's when Suzanne went missing. 6 months later, June, police encounter 17-year-old William Herons Lincoln Wood resident right outside city of Chicago. He had
a bright kid, as you've pointed out. This is a pretty smart kid.
Yeah, at 16, he actually kind of skipped through high school and was admitted to the University of Chicago. And so he was certainly a troubled child in the sense that he grew up doing some burglaries. And his parents were very argumentative. He had a difficult childhood. So he was able to escape by going to school. And when he couldn't afford that anymore, he went back to, burglaries and stealing to support him going to U of C. So that's where police encounter him, actually in Rogers Park, which relatively is close to Edgewater where this happened, mm-hmm. but really, you know, quite a ways, locally speaking. So they run into him, they corner him at an apartment building in the process of a burglary, and according to police, he drew a gun and tried to shoot a detective, but the gun jammed. And above him, a police officer drops 3 flower pots, which knocks him out cold. He's unconscious.
This is like a movie.
I know.
Yeah.
Like a Max Sennett movie where cops would, instead of shooting, would throw flower pots at the assailant.
I know. It's just one of those details that it's like, oh, it's just too bizarre to be true. So they take him over to the Edgewater Medical Center, bandage him up, then they take him to the Cook County Jail, where they strap him to a bed for a few days. They inject him with sodium pentothal, which is known as truth serum, which basically has no scientific validity of getting anybody to
really
confess.
I thought
the truth
that totally worked.
Actually, it's been used in lethal injection formulas.
Sodium pentothal, yes.
Yeah. So they're injecting this kid essentially with this, questioning him for days. They gave him a spinal tap without any sort of anesthetic. And they really put him through hell, and they kept him away from his parents and a lawyer during this time.
Much like Brandon Dassey on The Making of a Murderer.
Right. And so that's where
he's
you start
a minor.
To see. Yeah. And the technique that they use in Making a Murderer, known as the Chicago technique, was really being developed at this time with Herons. And so you see the roots of that and the origins of that being used in this case.
Lindsay, I know this is 70 years ago, but we've come a long way in crime solving in 70 years. Is this the sort of thing that, had we had the same technology 70 years ago, would they have been able to solve this almost immediately?
I think that I want to say that they at least wouldn't have convicted him. And that's what a lot of many other people say, that because the standard of evidence that they had was extremely low.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the things they used to convict him, like fingerprints and handwriting and all that stuff, later completely discredited. He passed lie detector tests. And actually, an attorney for the Center on Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern, who was representing Herons later on, he points to a completely different person who actually confessed to the crime to police, but police disregarded his testimony.
Because it's already settled, and then they look like they've made a mistake, and then there's a killer still out there.
Yeah.
That's what critics say.
Tragic.
To your knowledge, was anyone else in the area killed in similar fashion where they would sort of believe maybe this isn't the right guy, or did that just never happen?
After the fact?
After the two women and the child had mm-hmm. been killed and they brought this kid in, was there anybody else in the area that was killed similarly?
Not to my knowledge.
No.
Not that I know of. That not to say that didn't happen, but the guy who the attorney at Northwestern points to, it was a nurse with the skill to do this, had a history of sexually abusing his daughter, was in the area at the time, fled the area after that.
Oh, wow.
And confessed to police after he fled the area when he got picked up by police in Arizona. He actually confessed to it. By that time, the pressure from newspapers, just the general public on the police and to solve the crime, you know, they found Herons at what they felt was the right time. And so it's remained
very what a story.
Open since then.
And you can read the full story. Where do we find this, Lindsay?
DNAinfo.com/Chicago.
Her name's Lindsay Rice, spelled Linze Rice. You do a great job of telling a tale, and you should be a detective because you're going and getting all this information. Really fascinating.
Thank you so much. I should be a reporter.
Well, think about it. Consider it. Don't jump to anything, but if you like it. Thank you, Lindsay. We appreciate it. Yes, we'll take a quick break. Then Kim Gordon has the news, and then more show ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN.